So we had a few weeks ago the head of the CDC saying, we don't think this is going to be a pandemic after all. And now we have this, the government releasing a report saying, well, if there is, we want everybody to be ready. We want the states to be ready. We want cities and businesses to be ready. But apparently, I guess after the federal government helped screw up the Katrina situation in New Orleans, they don't want to get involved in this.
Well, it does seem like there's a political aspect to this, doesn't it, George? But I think, you know, they're sending a lot of conflicting signals, and I think what the public needs is a straight shot here at understanding what's going on. You know, because a plan like this is announced today doesn't mean that something is imminent, and unfortunately, the way this plan is described, it gives you the impression that something disastrous is about to happen. It's a very Hitchcockian type of situation. But the fact is that there is nothing imminent right now. And if, as you point out, George, the plan itself is, hey, something terrible might happen. And if it does, don't ask us to help. We'll leave it to someone else.
You know, Mark, I hate to say this, but I think if anything does happen, it won't be because this flu naturally mutated and came across and got humans. I think somebody's in a laboratory trying to play around and something stupid's going to happen that way.
Well, that at least doubled the chance. I mean, we've actually isolated the 1918 virus, and then we have scientists that are taking that information and trying to see how it applies to this virus, the H5N1 virus. And a lot of this information is publicly available, so this manipulation can go on in not the most friendly of laboratories as well.
This is a very strange plan. It's 227 pages. It provides for limits on travel, does not close the borders, so not even the bird flu is going to do that. But it asks for and it requires some very strange things. Say they want to increase the supply of flu treatments, hoping to provide up to 50 million people by 2007. All this is weird to me, Mark, because first of all, they talk about vaccines. They haven't even developed one yet. How could they be talking about having one?
Well, not only that, George, they do have a vaccine, but the one that they have actually has been shown to not be very effective against this strain.
So what good is it?
Right, it's not that good, and it requires at least two doses at very high amounts. And the strain is constantly changing, so by the time it actually got to be something where you'd need a vaccine, it might not be covered. And the fact is, we have the genetic technology available to us to make vaccines in a much better way, where we could, instead of trying to anticipate something, kind of like a crapshoot, where we could actually respond to an emerging virus by then ramping up a vaccine. Unfortunately, we're not using that technology for flu. We're using it for hepatitis. So we need to use our research dollars on humans rather than on just animals to develop new types of ways we make vaccines.
Dr. Siegel, hasn't this bird flu been around for at least 9 years? Wasn't it out there in Vietnam some time ago?
Absolutely. In fact, this bird flu could be traced back to a strain from the late 1950s. But in the late 1990s, we first saw cases where it began to infect humans very, very remotely. In fact, in the early 1990s, there were some similar strains where three countries had this and we actually got rid of it. But it keeps reemerging, and there hasn't been enough attempt to control it in birds. You know, we're so worried and paranoid from a human point of view, but there's not enough effort made in controlling this in birds. A lot more resources need to be going in that direction. If you had a fire around the block from you, you would try to put the fire out rather than just building a firewall around your house.
Well, that's true. You know, and I would feel better about this report if they merely said, look, we don't even think this bird flu is going to be a pandemic. We don't want to scare anybody. But, you know, we as a nation just need to be prepared for anything. So we're going to put together this plan for you. It might not be implemented next year. It might not be implemented in 10 years. It may never be implemented. But we're going to cover our bases. We don't want to be accused of never being ready. So we're going to spend some money and prepare ourselves just in case something happens. I could accept that, but to isolate and say, hey, there could be a pandemic with this bird flu, I think is scare tactics.
Well, George, I like the way you just described it, and I always say we need a new language in public health and how to describe risk, and you just described it accurately. You need to be able to tell people, look, this is something in case of a remote case, or, you know, this is something for the future, instead of describing it in a way which makes it seem so imminent. The fact is, the way you prepare depends on how imminent you think something is. And a lot of the preparation that's going on is going to be wasted when this thing doesn't happen around the corner. You're going to have to throw out a lot of these vaccines and antiviral drugs. If we changed our perspective to preparing a vaccine for future use, or for improving our hospitals for down the line, or making us more independent than as a society. You know, we get 95% of our medications overseas. We need to start making them here. If those practical moves went on, you'd save money rather than throwing money away.
And I guess if they're going to do some real preparedness, they should do one for the possibility of an asteroid strike, a tsunami, any kind of disaster.
Well, and you can't prepare for everything, and so you have to start to think about what kind of things are actually likely to happen. I mean, in fact, today, as we were talking about this, there was a possibility of another tsunami, and I couldn't help but think, we're always talking about these remote possibilities and magnifying them and making the public afraid. We're not doing the public a service when we do that.
If you were the head of the CDC today, and they said to you, okay, Dr. Siegel, you can hold your national news conference or speak to the American people about any kind of issue you want, the bird flu, whatever, what would you say? How would you say it to so many millions of people?
Well, here's what I'd start with, George. First of all, I'd say, you know, if we make you very afraid of chicken around the world, we may end up increasing the problem with malnutrition, where a lot of people rely on chickens for their staple products, and eating cooked chicken is totally safe. Then I'd also add, if you want to worry about bird flu, consider the fact that two recent studies have shown that it's very difficult for this particular bird flu to infect humans because it doesn't track in the upper respiratory tract, which is where human flus go. We've seen this vividly described in scientific studies, but it's not being emphasized enough. We cough and sneeze our flus to each other. This particular bird flu doesn't work that way. That's good news for us. We shouldn't suppress information like that. We need to be reassured by the proper type of things. So, you know, that's what the head of the CDC should be talking about. And other diseases like HIV, AIDS, these things are going to lose a lot of their resources because we're always worried about the latest thing. And, you know, it's normal, it's human nature to be afraid of the unknown, but public health should be combating that and say, well, I know why you're afraid of this bird flu, because you didn't hear about it before, because it's brand new. It's remote, but it's brand new. But hey, what about HIV/AIDS? What about tuberculosis that kills 2 million people every year? You know, what about malaria that infects 50 million people a year? These are things we need to continue to worry about.